welcome back to Between Two Wings. I'm your host, Emily Norman, and today we have the CEO of AOPA with us, Mark Baker. Mark, thank you so much for coming on our show today.
It should be fun. Looking forward to sharing some thoughts.
Definitely. So we start off each episode just kind of explaining where we're at. And behind me, I have the Battleship Texas and San Jacinto Monument. Ignore the power plants in the upper corner. It's still probably one of my favorite little historical flights to do in Southeast Texas. But what have you got behind you?
Well, I've got behind me my Cessna Caravan up in Alaska this summer. I've had this caravan for, I've actually owned it a long time ago, 20 years ago. I bought it from Jimmy Buffett. And then I sold it to a friend of mine and bought a different caravan. Then ended up buying it back again two years ago. So that's my summer trip to Alaska this year.
That's awesome. Did you have any personal interactions with Jimmy Buffett? Did you guys see the exchange in Margaritaville or anything like that? Or
a long time ago. Yeah. He was interested in flying up to Churchill and seeing polar bears because he still got a caravan on Amphibs as well. He buys a new one every few years, I guess. He was very interested. And so far, we just haven't been able to make that work. And we also shared some albatross stories. He was a big albatross fan and has a flying boat. I haven't seen him for a few years now, but he has a Grumman goose he's restoring, and I have a Grumman widget I'm restoring.
Yeah, well, next time he ever wants to see the caravan, you know, swing down to Houston, pick me up, and I can be your co-pilot down there. So let me know about that. But so you've been in aviation for over 40 years. You've had a lot of experience in different aircrafts. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've been really lucky and very fortunate, but I had got the bug when I was a little kid, and my grandparents and my dad used to take me out to the airport and ride in an airplane for a penny a pound right up until I got to be about 50 pounds. And then that was it. No more 50-cent rides for me. But I took high school, my ground school education, and also, as well as the University of Minnesota, started flying right then. And I and a friend bought a Cessna 150 from a farmer in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, who I just saw this last weekend. 45 years ago, I bought that airplane for $5,200. And it cost us about $6 an hour to have an instructor teach us how to fly it. So I got my license back in the middle 70s, and it's certainly been a lot of fun since then. I've owned over 100 different airplanes since that period of time, and been fortunate enough to fly all over North America as well as lots of the world.
Yeah, and you know, just going back to some of those amazing sounding prices for flight training, you've seen all different changes and trends in the aviation industry, and then how does it feel to now be leading the largest advocate for general aviation?
You know, if the call came in about 8.5 years ago, how'd you like to run a nonprofit from a search agency? And I said, on purpose? And then they described it as being in aviation. And I said, well, if it's AOPA, I'd be totally interested. As I became an AOPA member, as my first flight instructor said, I'm not going to sell you until you sign up for this thing called AOPA. And I didn't know what it was. And I've been a member for a long time. And I appreciate what this storied institution has created since 1939, 82 years. And I'm only the fifth president in that period of 82 years to lead this organization and represent the 300 plus thousand members.
Like you said, this was something that you weren't doing before. How did some of the experience you had as, you know, executive at other companies, how did that prepare you to take this on?
Well, I was very lucky to start a lumber company in the Twin Cities called Knox Lumber Company. Long since gone, but three of the guys are World War II guys. Two more pilots in World War II, and they took a job of kind of mentoring me and helping me understand business and how to buy timber and lumber and all kinds of different parts of the aspects of running a retail chain. I did courses in college about how to identify retail locations by doing, you know, regression analysis and all things like that. As it turned out later on, I became a part of Home Depot at the very early stages of when there was about 100 stores, and was involved in pretty much all the locations up through 1,200 Home Depot stores. And ultimately became the chief operating officer and merchandising guy for Home Depot in the early to middle 90s and right through the early 2000s. And it was a great learning curve to be prepared to operate AOPA. About it is a business. We've got to do the right things for our members, in this case, instead of customers. We've got to create value. We've got to create, you know, cohesiveness around the objective. And so I consider all my retail training preparation.
Yeah, definitely all good experience there. And so diving into what the mission of AOPA is, protecting our freedom to fly, sounds like it's a very, you know, basic, understandable sentence, but what does that actually mean to you?
It's the words, protecting our freedom to fly, or your freedom to fly, is a very big and broad kind of objective, but it's about making sure that we keep these 5,000 public airports operating. Means that we don't become more regulated than we already are with things from the FAA, and talk a little bit more about what that means specifically. Mm-hmm. But also means about being safe in the environment, making sure we can do the things in aviation, which has driven us to become the safest year ever in general aviation was the last 12 months, with more flying going on, by the way. So it's things like that, and then ultimately the freedom to fly is reflective in some of the costs that we try and manage and help create value in aviation where we can. It's expensive to fly. It's never going to be cheap. But there are ways that we've been getting new products brought into aviation, electronics, what we call non-TSO'd, for getting autopilots and old airplanes, things like that, and hopefully lower costs than we would even imagine just 10 years ago.
And, going back again to when it started in 1939, obviously the same mission, but the actions you had to take were a lot different. What were some of the challenges that they faced back then?
Their objective was to become a source of power and be able to negotiate with the regulators in aviation, because there were big problems with safety in that time. But there were about 12,000 private airplanes in the late 1930s in the country, not very many. But about a third of them were getting wrecked every year. So there's a big, huge safety thing that was imperative to try and make sure people could, kind of the outbreak of World War II, that general aviation wasn't shuttled to the sideline and not able to use the space, but instead by being representative in Congress at that point in time to make sure that general aviation was used to train civilian pilots and it also patrolled the shorelines against U-boats. So AO became a kind of a burgeoning advocacy organization by the middle 40s and became a powerhouse by the 50s and when general aviation really started to boom.
And, looking forward a little bit now, the next 10 years, what are some of the challenges that you think we're going to face in your opinion, or just maybe even some trends that you're seeing that are leading that way?
Certainly we have some threats, and we've got some always, we've got 7 regional managers that work at the state house level to make sure that we can protect these airports. And we've had some threats and losses. Santa Monica has been a problem for a long period of time. And developers want to take the airport away from general aviation and use it for development. And we've got at least a stay at the game for another 10 years. And Reed Hillview in San Francisco Bay Area is under threat right now because of both the developers want to use the airport for development and the city's kind of grown around these airports. But also we have some real issues. And fundamentally, we have a product called low lead fuel, which is still has the word lead in it, 4-letter word. Yeah. And we can't be on the side of the lead is good for you, because it's not the facts. But it has been a good fuel and much lower lead. And the reality is we don't believe it's actually causing any environmental problems, in significance today or in any regard today. But it is not a popular, and we would much prefer to move on to a new fuel. We've been working on it with Congress for the last 10 years. We've spent $40 million of taxpayer money to try and invent a new fuel that will be good to use from 1920s airplanes to airplanes that are being built today. They go high and hot and big horsepower. So we've still got some struggles to find an alternative fuel. Got a couple ideas that are coming together, hopefully pretty soon. But that's an important aspect of making sure we are a good neighbor for the airport and protect these 5,000 basic, really good airports. And this infrastructure isn't available anywhere else in the world. And we also have 12,000 private airports out in the country today. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of landing spots. We just got to protect them.
Yeah, well, I know we all appreciate so much what you guys do. And I'm looking forward to seeing where some of those new things coming up in the next 2 years, like we just discussed. So thinking a little bit about the COVID-19 pandemic, were there any trends or changes in behavior that, surprised you or you just weren't really expecting?
Yeah, boy, go back 18 months, seems like years ago now, but yeah. When the world started shutting down, particularly here in the U.S., it was very frightening to the organization, to our employees at AOPA, what was going to happen next. And, what I'm proud to say is that we come through the first 90 days, and by the time we were in the fourth month of the pandemic, we'd come up with protocols how to clean your airplane for flight training. And just like other recreations, whether it be boats or motorhomes, aviation started to boom. And as well, now there's huge job opportunities in aviation. As they retired a lot of the pilots, and the business community has really decided to jump back into general aviation. So what's happened is on any given day for the last year, general aviation activity is up between 25 and 35% above 2019. And the price of used airplanes have skyrocketed. new airplanes are basically sold out for the next couple of years. And we've seen more flight training going on today than we've seen in almost 40 years.
Yeah, it's honestly been really inspiring as well, just to see all those pilots getting back into it who didn't have the time or just any other resources to really, you know, continue into aviation. So at AOPA, you guys do so much. You have so many services, so many resources, you know, online and even with your magazine. What are some of the most underutilized, maybe unknown activities that AOPA does for general aviation?
Boy, there's certainly a lot. And if you go to AOPA.org and look at the website, there's a lot of available stuff. And one of the first things that we do from a foundation perspective is we make safety free. A bunch of donors starting in the 1960s said, you know, aviation safety should be free. Safety is one of those things that we want to make sure. And that's one of the reasons we're celebrating the best results ever in general aviation and coming out of more activity pretty significant. But the other thing that I think a lot of people are surprised about is the size of our foundation. A foundation is a piece where all this donor money that comes into aviation, how do we grow the next generation? How do we better safety? But we started this thing called You Can Fly about 7 years ago. And You Can Fly has four aspects of it. One of them is the high school education program, which I'd like to talk a little about. Rusty pilots, getting them back into aviation. Mm-hmm. So far, over 10,000 folks have come back to aviation through the Rusty Pilot Program. Brand new flying clubs. There's over 700 flying clubs on our flying club finder on the website. So people can come together as a community and have fun and do that. And we're really working hard more recently on how do we make sure that the success in NGA and getting your pilot's license is more successful, because you're going through a lot of flight instructors typically today, and have an app today that you can join as a young pilot and make sure you get good communication with your flight instructor. There's a lot of great flight instructors out there, but there's a lot of new flight instructors out there that learn how to do their job as well. We want to help both sides be successful. And that's kind of what I think most people are surprised about, is the depth of AOPA and its foundation.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I think we could all go on AOPA.org and, you know, spend a few hours just tapping around and finding things that we may not have been aware of. So what are some ways that us pilots can also help out with the mission to protect everyone's freedom to fly?
Well, first off, be an AOPA member. You know, we work with all the associations, whether it's EAA or NBAA or Gamma Helicopter Associations. We're stronger as a community together. You belong to one of these organizations, hopefully OPA and some of the other Seaplane Pilots Associations, whatever it is. This community needs to be, and is, very strong. One of the reasons we've got a new law being banned around in Congress right now is because of what they call Letter of Authorized Deviation Authority, which required every flight instructor teaching in an experimental airplane to get a piece of paper that says you can do it. And we got the law being processed right now. And by having say, hey, FAA, they made a mistake, let's make a law to make sure they don't do this again, which means basically flight instruction is never going to be considered carriage for hire. And we had to make that law. Without the strength of everybody belonging to these associations, we couldn't get laws done, like basic med that made into law 6 years ago, 5.5 years ago. It's now 67,000, 68,000 people using basic med. So by hanging together, really important. Second part of my answer here is, I believe you should be supporting AOPA's foundation. And right now we have a matching grant from the Ray Foundation. So every dollar you send in, they send a dollar up to $2.5 million, which provides for this free high school programming. So now we have over 450 classrooms in 44 states that have aviation from 9 to 12, teaching aviation. So we're bringing these young minds along to say, hey, this might be something you want to do. So 10,000 kids have done it this so far this fall. And I'm proud to say we can make that a lot bigger, but we need your help.
Well, like I said before, I cannot wait to see what else AOPA does. And Mark, thank you so much for coming on Between Two Wings to talk to us today.
Happy to do it. Happy flying.
For sure. And thank you everyone for tuning into this episode of Between Two Wings. We'll see you next time.